Cecil Harvell, and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's talk legal with Harvell & Collins, the right advice at the right time, and on the web at harvellandcollins.com. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio. And good Merry Christmas, guys.
Good morning.
Merry Christmas,
and
Ben.
And Happy New Year, too. This will be our last show of the year.
Right. So.
Well, Merry Christmas, Ben. And yes, here we are. Next Tuesday's the 24th.
Right.
And our office is closed, so we probably will not be here that day either.
That's right.
And the following week is the week that most of the law firms in Eastern North Carolina and the courthouse is kind of closed down between Christmas and New Year's. So this is our last program of the year, but we're glad to be here.
Good, good.
Absolutely.
And we've been talking about some things that I guess have a gifting component to it since we're around Christmas in the West. We've been talking about Medicaid.
Right. Over the past 3 or 4 weeks, we've been talking about, long-term health care planning mm-hmm. to protect assets. Some of these important issues we deal with our elderly mm-hmm. family members, so on and so forth. And we kind of led up in the program through talking about assets and talking about income and talking about the medical need. And I think where we left off last week after we answered a question, we mm-hmm. had a caller that led us through the end of the show with her question. We got to the point where we were talking about the sanction period.
Mm-hmm.
Because right. the general concept when we're talking about long-term health care planning, we're talking about Medicaid, is that you can only have a limited amount of what's called countable assets and become eligible for the long-term health care Medicaid.
Right. Amount.
Yeah, that's yeah. right, $2,000 for an individual, but that's countable assets. Mm-hmm. Of course, as we've talked about on the program, there are lots of assets that the law allows you to have that are non-countable assets. We've spoken about that, but obviously, where your mind kind of goes is, okay, well, if I can't have anything, can I just give it to my kids?
Right.
We get that question all the time. Mm-hmm. And of course, the law, under the Medicaid laws addresses that very specifically. And several years ago, the law changed with regard to that. Now, mm-hmm. A lot of people out there have heard of the 3-year look back or the 5-year look back or mm-hmm. whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
They're not exactly sure how it works, but they've heard about it.
Right.
And the law used to be that you could give assets away mm-hmm. and wait 3 years, and Medicaid could not look at those transfers at all.
Yeah.
Okay.
They were off the table.
That was if there was a gift to like a child or a family member. If you gifted into a trust, it was a 5-year look back mm-hmm. and it has been for a long period of time. Currently, the look back period is no longer 3 years, but it is 5 years as it relates to all transfers. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the easy part of it. The more difficult part of it is to explain how we calculate the sanction period.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So basically, let's say that someone gave, money, $55,000. That's mm-hmm. an easy number for us to deal with. Okay. To a child, and that took place 4.5 years ago, and now this person has to go into a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the person is eligible for Medicaid, meaning that he or she does not have countable assets over $2,000, or if the assets are spent down to under $2,000 on a lot of the things we've talked about on the program, right. Medicaid is going to ask for, and when I say Medicaid, it's the Department of Social Services. Mm-hmm. They help with the application process. They're going to ask for 5 years of account statements, and they're going to see
that you gave away
that $55,000 gift took place 4.5 years ago, and they're going to say, uh-oh, we've got to do something about this. And now the way that works would be the $55,000 is divided by $5,500. Okay, that's just the divisor. That's
mm-hmm.
because that is what the state of North Carolina says the average cost of care is, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that would give us 10. That means 10 months of no Medicaid. From the date that this person is applying for the Medicaid,
mm-hmm.
there'd be a 10-month period of time where there is no Medicaid.
Right.
Okay. But you can undo that sanction period by giving the $55,000 back to the applicant but then we've got a $55,000 asset.
Accountable asset, yeah.
And then we could maybe do some planning with regard to that as far as, you know, there's a lot of things we could do. We could pay off debt. You know, we can improve the home if the home is, you know, is a protected asset. A lot of things that we can do with the $55,000. We can buy the, go ahead and pre-purchase for the funeral. A lot of things, you know, can be done, but the point being that that sanction period, if it's within that 5-year look back, it's going to be something that we have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the conventional wisdom back years ago was, you know, give your asset away, wait 3 years
and you're in the clear.
And you're in the clear. And even another variation to that, I know this is getting a little bit complicated, but still another variation was that that 10-month period of time in, under the old law used to run from the date you made the gift.
Right. Yes. And that's so crucial because
that's
just almost doubles the time.
Well, more than that, because if we had made the gift 4.5 years ago, it's over within 10 months.
Right.
Now that 10-month period of time starts from the date of application.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big difference there. So
yeah, and even though you only had 6 months difference between when that would have been a countable asset and not, that's not prorated for that period.
Whole thing is countable, and it's, you know, it's cumulative. They add up all of the gifts of countable assets during the last 5 years. I just said the $55,000 one gift 4.5 years ago for ease of calculation so people listening on the radio can understand, right?
So, Ben, we've talked about, you know, these files at times past here on the radio program. And, of course, you know, these files are like so many of the types of files that we deal with where there's stages of the file. Of course, we've said that the first thing that Wes and I do and any good elder law lawyer is going to do is to protect the real property of the client, the home place, the family farm, any real estate investment that the family happens to have, because people know generally that the state of North Carolina, if their loved one goes on Medicaid, then the state of North Carolina Department of Medical Assistance is going to have a lien against the estate, and they're going to look to see whether or not there's any real property in that estate. The second stage of these files is exactly what we're talking about right now, is then looking at the money assets, if you will, the liquid assets of the applicant, whether it's a CD, a bank account, a stock, a U.S. savings bond, an annuity, more than $5,000 of cash value in life insurance, anything that has a present value where the client has the right to obtain those funds is considered liquidity. And that is, of course, countable. Countable, again, is the key word. Our job is to, if you will, put the square pegs in the square holes, the round pegs in the round holes, and look at this countable liquidity and find ways that the family can more appropriately begin to save those funds.
Right.
Things such as improving real estate that they long since did not, you know, improve, which happens pretty regularly, Ben, in terms of, you know, our elderly parents and grandparents, you know, they kind of let things fall in a little bit of disarray, if you will, as they age.
Right.
And many times we see clients that need repairs to the home,
or more accessibility options,
or more accessibility, or renovations to the real property. Also, of course, you know, any kind of retirement of debt is a useful tool that we look at, the prepayment of the funeral home. We also are able to take these funds if there is funds in excess of the amount of funds that we use on these other types of things like improvement, prepaying the funeral, things of that nature. We're able to take those things, generally take these liquid assets and make them non-countable by also investing those assets in certain forms of real estate.
Okay.
Because real estate in the state of North Carolina, as long as it is not titled in the estate of the decedent, is protected. North Carolina historically has been an agricultural state. There are so many pieces of property, as we know, the majority of real property in the state of North Carolina that's owned in tenants in common interest between families on family farms,
right.
agricultural, timber,
right.
land. More of this type of ownership than any other kind of real property ownership. We all think that the majority of real property in the state of North Carolina, you know, is that lot and that block in the subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that's what we all see.
Exactly.
Particularly right now at Christmas time,
yeah.
all the beautiful Christmas lights. Well, that's just not the case. The majority of real property owning in the state of North Carolina is in family farms,
mm.
agricultural property, timber property,
mm-hmm.
and much of this property is owned in tenants in common interest between family members.
Mm.
And so the legislature of North Carolina has exempted from lien recovery, from Medicaid recovery, the right to be able to go in and attach tenants in common interest in real property. It also is difficult to do, let's
mm-hmm.
face it.
Right.
Because in order to receive the whole, you not only have to have a lien against your part, but you have to then foreclose, if you will, or petition to partition the interest, the other owners of the property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so again, property, though, is sacrosanct. I mean,
real property, land.
It has a special place
it
in
does.
Law. So.
It does, and it does in Medicaid law as well.
All right, we'll have more to come in just a moment here on a Coastal Daybreak. And Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. As always, you can take a look at their website, harvellandcollins.com, and call to make that appointment, 252-726-9050. Hey, welcome back. We're talking about assets that are countable, not countable for Medicaid, and I think we wanted to go back.
Right.
And
Ben, let me just more specifically restate what I was stating before the break.
Uh-huh.
Tenants in common interest, which means an undivided interest in real property, that is an ownership such as that is not going to disqualify you from receiving Medicaid benefits just because you happen to have a third of a family farm,
right.
or a half of an investment property with another person. A tenants in common interest, an undivided interest in property in and of itself is not going to disqualify you. Okay, and it is very protected in the state of North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
but not if it's left in the estate of the decedent.
Right. Right.
You cannot leave the tenants in common because the Department of Medical Assistance will have a lien against that respective mm-hmm. undivided interest if you leave it in the estate. So it's very important to look at these assets to see where the title rests. We do a lot of deed analysis with these properties and transfers of properties to certain kinds of trusts that qualify for qualification for Medicaid. All of this, it's a minefield, if you
right,
will.
Right.
But absolutely one of the tools that we use is the use of an undivided interest in real property.
And if they came back with a lien against that, then that would be a hardship on the other family members owning that property, right?
Yeah, it could be. You know, if we have someone who has farmland, a third, a third, a third with their brothers, for example, and the individual receives Medicaid,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, there's a Medicaid lien through a state recovery of, you know, say $100,000 or so against that one-third interest, then the state of North Carolina certainly could force the sale of only that one-third interest,
right.
not the other two-thirds. They can't. That's what basically mm-hmm. Cecil was saying, you know. You can go after that one-third interest if it's not structured properly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with good planning, the one-third interest could be set up in a way where the state of North Carolina legally did not have the right to seek recovery of that one-third.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say that planning wasn't done and they can go after the one-third. Well, they can force the sale of the property, but then that begs the question, you know, who's going to buy one-third interest with the two
right.
other brothers?
Right.
And in that type of situation, the state would probably be the high bidder on what's called a public sale of the property for the purposes of paying this debt.
Mm-hmm.
So the one-third owner would be the state of North Carolina, then brother two and brother three. But then the state of North Carolina, as Cecil was saying, could file a petition to partition the property,
right.
which would be a forced sale of the entire property. So it's a multiple-step process But in the
brothers
in the,
2 and 3 though could satisfy the lien though, couldn't they?
They could. But with good planning, they wouldn't have to.
Right.
But also, you know, the state of North Carolina is probably not going to go through all of that headache, because this headache is expense.
Yes.
You know what they're going to do is they're going to contact the estate and say, hey, we've got a $100,000 lien. Let's see if we can settle this for less.
Right.
Probably.
Also,
but they can do it.
They can
if they want.
So the threat is there.
Yeah. Yep. But Ben, these liens are significant. I mean, we see them, you know, every day. I mean, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars, you know, pushing $500,000. You know, these liens are many times not small.
Right.
Because keep in mind, they're accumulating at a rate of about $5,000 or $6,000 a month. During the care of the loved one in a nursing facility. So, you know, $6,000 a month is $72,000 a year, correct?
Exactly.
So 2 years is $140,000. 4 years is $280,000. I mean, we see figures like that routinely. So to expect a brother or sister to be able to hold on to the family farm and buy out those kinds of liens with the state of North Carolina is very difficult. We also find in our practice that it is difficult to compromise these claims. We are sometimes we get the back end as of the file, as you would expect.
Right. You know,
no planning was done. They just simply come in with their lien and say, what can I do about it? Is there anything I can do about it now? And we're in a quagmire at that point. You know, the Internal Revenue Service, the North Carolina Department of Revenue, are somewhat set up with their staff in order to make compromises. You know, if you owe the Internal Revenue Service money, there is a department that you can speak to about settlement and compromise. With the Department of Medical Assistance in Raleigh, the North Carolina Department of Revenue, if you will, there isn't any real department to speak to about compromise. It's difficult to find someone to really lock into the file on an information basis and be able to receive a good result for the client. Not to mention the fact that they just simply are very comfortable holding that property hostage, if you will, hoping and praying at some point it will sell or other family members, as we've discussed, will buy that interest out. And they will, in fact, receive their money. I mean, Wes, don't you agree? Don't you have a difficult time kind of getting locked in with someone to talk to?
Yeah, no question about that, Cecil. Yeah. And, you know, the person that I end up talking to, because I'm the guy who ends up going to court on issues at Harvell and Collins, is the attorney who is hired to open the estate and to force the sale of the property. Usually a public administrator is appointed, and you know, they'll reopen the estate if the estate's been closed and require the sale of the property. So, you know, once it's gotten to that point,
it's being litigated, it's pretty serious, the
state is going to go ahead and enforce this. So I think that the message is, please plan ahead. Our job is much easier, much cheaper if we can, you know, deal with a situation on the front end as opposed to the back end.
Okay. We'll talk more about this in just a moment here with Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. Your questions are still welcome. 800-818-2255 or one of our local numbers. And remember, go online at harvellandcollins.com to listen to past shows and get a lot of good advice right there on the website. And you can call on them for your appointment too at 252-726 Welcome back. We're talking about Medicaid and qualifications for that. And Wes, where does income fall into this if somebody is, you know, receiving Social Security or they have a pension?
That's, you know, one of the different elements we look at. It's really medical need, assets, and then income.
Right.
Okay. it doesn't matter under the Medicaid law what your income is, that your income itself is not going to disqualify you unless your income is so high that it's over the $6,000 a month, because whatever, which would be the average cost of care or something like that, whatever your income is, which we're talking about fixed income, we're talking about like Social Security, pension, retirement, those kind of things.
Right.
That is going to fall into the category of your PML, which is your patient's monthly liability.
Okay.
We're going to lose that income.
Right.
Okay. Whoever the applicant is loses the income. Mm-hmm. All right. Or the recipient, I should say. But we don't lose the income of the spouse. So that's a really important issue. A lot of times, let's say, you know, when the husband, for example, is, you know, they have, you know, a house and minimal assets and he has significant income and that's what they make ends meet on. Okay. And then you've got the spouse who's, you know, healthy, the community spouse, she's at home. Well, that's all the more reason that we really need to plan to protect the house and the little bit of savings they have because that income, we're going to lose it. And we don't know how long, the community spouse, the healthy spouse, the wife in this situation is going to live. Yeah. You know?
What about, IRAs and required minimum distributions? Where does that all fall into that too?
Well, we don't have to worry about that too much because we're not probably going to have an IRA if we're receiving Medicaid. That's an asset that it's an individual account. So it has to be in the individual's name. So it's an asset that would be countable otherwise. So sometimes we're having to look at those IRAs, liquidate those IRAs, take the tax hit, you know, because there usually would be a tax hit.
Right.
If it's, you know, a traditional IRA and, but that's part of the spend down. And we're not going to have that income coming off of that type of, you know, tax exempt or tax deferred vehicle.
But keep in mind, Ben, that's a neutral issue because the family's being forced to liquidate the IRA anyway.
Right.
To come up with the money for the $5,000 to $6,000 a month for care. So they're liquidating it there in that scenario. Or they can liquidate it in a more conscious way with planning on our side so as to liquidate it but then protect it.
Pay me now or pay me later.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
But no, we're not going to be able to hold on to the IRA. But absolutely, I'm glad we got to this issue of income because we get that question often. And there's not much that we can do to protect the Social Security, the pension, the income, if you will, of the person who is receiving Medicaid. The income is going to go off the top. There under very limited circumstances, there can be some allocation of the income. Usually it's back from the husband over to the wife when the husband's income, let's say the husband has a $3,000 or $4,000 a month income.
Right.
And the wife has a $300 or $400 Social Security.
Right.
Now there will be some allocation of the husband's income back to the community spouse, the wife. So as to, of course, give her, you know, comfort.
Well, as we always say, every case is different, and so every case needs to be analyzed on its own merits, and that's why you call on the folks at Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law, and you can reach them at 252-726-9050. They're at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City and online at harvellandcollins.com. Merry Christmas to you guys, and have a Happy New Year, too. We'll see
Thank you, Ben. Have a Merry Christmas.